Christy stood on tiptoe, the rock warm and rough beneath her bare feet, the sun hot across her shoulders, glowing over her bare breasts, rousing her taut nipples. She flexed the muscles that tightened along the back of her thighs into the firm buttocks. Lifting her arms slowly, she looked out across the lake of azure water toward the snow-tipped peaks in the distance. She breathed in slowly, filling her lungs with the cold, thin air of the high country, tasting sagebrush and the sharp scent of balsam from the ocean of dark pines on the mountains around. She didn't look down. The drop to the water was more than 50 feet, a gasping exhilaration as you sprang out, a second and a half of freedom before your arms sliced the icy water apart, and the shock of plunging beneath the surface. The lake was several miles from Harmonyville, and few ever bothered to take the long, winding trail. The area was known to harbor a number of savage, muty grizzlies, and her uncle, Tyus McCann, had warned her to take the greatest care. But she refused to carry a blaster, relying instead on her own power of seeing to warn her of the proximity of any harmful creature. Mother Sonia had told her how to behave if she encountered one of the forest behemoths. Try to make oneself small and back slowly away. Don't make any challenging eye contact with a beast. The chances were very good that it wouldn't go after someone, unless it felt threatened. That thought came to Christy as she readied herself for the dive. And freedom. This time was different. There was no sensation of the swooping plunge into the lake. Christy had closed her eyes in an almost sexual anticipation of the moment. Now she opened them, blinking in disbelief, almost blinded by the platinum sheen of the sun dazzling into her face. She hung there, maybe 8 feet out from the clifftop. Stasis. A stillness. Finally, she looked down.
What?
To where the mirrored surface of the lake should have been. Instead, there were jagged rocks, like red-orange spears and daggers gathered beneath her, waiting to accept her fragile skin, flesh, and bone, and crush and tear them to bloodied rags. Motionless in space, not daring to try to move so much as a finger, Christy Roth began to scream. Doc Tanner felt the familiar sickening sensation as the gateway began to function. It seemed as though the inside of his skull were being fluffed and folded, his brain being sucked and scraped out of the familiar creases and wrinkles of moist bone. And suddenly, Doc was in another century. He was 5 years old, still living in South Stratford, a tiny hamlet in the wilds of Vermont. During the harvest, a traveling medicine show had come through. A poor, threadbare group selling quack cure-alls from the back of a rickety Conestoga wagon. The outfit was led by an old man with a patch over one eye and his younger wife, a handsome black woman with plaited hair. Their daughter had danced for money thrown by the local rubes. She'd been a tall girl with a mane of scarlet hair that whirled about her brocaded shoulders as her bare feet skimmed the mown grass. There'd been another child, Doc remembered, hiding in the shadowy depths of the rig, peeking out now and again through eyes like molten rubies. The boy had been an albino with milky skin and hair like the finest Sierra snows. And there'd been a merry-go-round, operated by a small, wiry man who had a pince-nez with golden frames. It was simply a circle of seats surrounding a central pillar, garishly painted with designs that seemed to have their origins in the Mexican celebrations for the dead. Yellow skulls and gibbering skeletons, fleshless fingers that beckoned to the excited children as the carousel whirled them around and around. The little man spun it by hand, slowly at first, so that little Theo Tanner and the others could see their watching mother's faces going by, to take in the long straight street of the village with its sharp bend at the northernmost point, and all around the endless undulating carpet of trees. Faster. Now the faces were blurred as they hissed by, and your eyes betrayed you so that you couldn't quite focus on anything anymore. Even faster, Theo realized that he was on his own on the smooth, polished seat. The other children, his laughing chums, had vanished. And now it was going so much faster. Now there was nothing to be seen, except a swirling, endless smear of colors. Doc was aware that he was crying, tears flooding his eyes, running down over the grizzled stubble on his cheeks. His fingers gripped at the bar along the rear of the seats, his lips moving in a silent, pattering prayer.
No!
A rope of saliva dangled from his chin onto his waistcoat. His sword stick, with its silver lion's head hilt, spun away from his feet and disappeared. It wasn't humanly possible to rotate at such a speed. He was pushed back in the chair, feeling the skin on his face tightened by the whirling force. J.B. Dix sat crouched over in the dead end of a long, narrow tunnel, holding an empty 25-caliber Bauer automatic. With a neutral, satin stainless finish and American walnut grips, the little gun looked much like the baby Browning. He held the cold metal against his cheek.
Know everything about it. Made in Fraser, Michigan. Bauer Firearms Corporation. Says so, right here on the side of the barrel, in this pretty incised writing.
The walls of the tunnel were bare earth, running with brackish water. It was 2 feet and 4 inches wide, and less than 3 feet from muddy floor to dripping roof. JB tightened his finger on the trigger, knowing what would happen if he squeezed it. There'd be the cold click of the dry fire, the noise carrying through the lingering stillness far beneath the earth, bringing them to him.
Empty.
There was nowhere left. He couldn't quite recall why he was in the tunnel, or whom he'd been with. There was the memory of a woman. Funny. He knew her name, but couldn't remember what she'd looked like.
Mildred.
The darkness was pressing in on him, suffocating his mind so that it seemed to be melting within his skull. Everything was falling apart, and he knew that he couldn't put it back together again.
Finished.
Now he could hear them.
Enough.
He lifted the delicate metal shell of the Bauer to his face. It was empty. Not even a spent cartridge remaining. JB jumped for a moment as some tiny creature wriggled over his skin, then opened his mouth and parted his lips just wide enough to slip the barrel inside.
Better this way.
He bit hard on the metal to hold it steady, then pulled the trigger.
Bang!
JB sat alone in the circling blackness and waited. Mildred Wyeth walked along empty streets, the heels of her shoes tapping on the dusty concrete. It was a city that she sort of recognized. Parts of it were familiar, but parts were different. Hills where the highway should have been flat, squares instead of shopping malls, office towers where she remembered tree-lined suburban streets, and all empty. There was a child's small yellow ball resting in the gutter, and she paused and stared down at it, certain that it must mean something. She stooped to pick it up. Then a worm came from the heart of the golden apple. Mildred was conscious of a prickling warmth between her thighs, and she wondered where John had gone.
John?
She tried to focus on a face to go with the name, seeing only the glittering blankness of sunlight reflecting off the lenses of metal-rimmed spectacles. Standing still, she was aware of the silence.
I don't feel myself.
A young girl who begins to feel herself will come to a bad end.
The spectral voice came from above. She looked up to see nothing but air.
But if nothing is true, then everything is permitted.
Nobody loves a smartass.
Without her being aware of change, the city was gone, and she was sitting on a porch in an old rocking chair. It was a hot summer evening, with the cicadas chittering away from the trees that fringed the garden. A pitcher of homemade lemonade stood on a round table, its sides misted with beads of condensation. A little boy was standing beside her, holding a swatch of cloth, a dry, crackling ivory material that smelled strongly of pitch and cinnamon. Mildred smiled at him, but the boy didn't respond. He began to wind the cloth around her head and face, masking her eyes, muffling her hearing, choking her with its oppressive heat and scent. She opened her mouth, and the material flooded in, pressing down on her tongue like the shed skin of a serpent.